slot, and we're very lucky to have here Paul McHenney of the Recordrama Sound Archives, Pittsburgh. And he will present to you from the realm of popular music now as a sort of a shift to show our variety of interest in ARSC. And then we'll go back again, you know, with Seth Wiener and Don McCormick to Toscanini. But Paul will talk now about the world's most released non-hit record from Pittsburgh to Baltimore to Oblivion. And I think that it's Let Me Love You, the name of the record. So, Paul.
I'd like to thank ARSC for giving me this opportunity and share your time with me. It's always been a pleasure. This is the first time I've had an opportunity to share one of my stories with you. Basically, when I was in the service, we called these war stories. I guess when you're a record collector, these are record stories. This is a history of a record that I ran across in doing my cataloging. This record kept turning up. And it became very intriguing to me for the same record that was never a hit to be issued so many times on so many labels. And I started delving into it. And this is from Pittsburgh to Baltimore to Oblivion. Unfortunately, there's no double entendre records or anything, you know, like my friend Bill would have. This is just a straight story about a single record. Story begins in a recording studio in Pittsburgh. GNC Records on Penn Avenue was long a mainstay for struggling beginners trying to break into the record business. It was a place where a record could be cut in the front room studio and then 500 or 1,000 copies could be pressed in the back room. All this would cost a couple $100s. Of course, you had to supply the musicians and singers along with a producer. The first session of Let Me Love You was unusual from its conception. First, it would cost $2,000 instead of the usual $100 to $200. Second, it included the string section from the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra and the Duquesne Horns. It was arranged and conducted by Jim Drake and was produced by famed concert promoter Pat the Caesar and co-produced by a local record distributor in Pittsburgh for Mobile Records, Donnie Bray. Let Me Love You was written by George Salevich, who happens to be a former vice president of Atlantic Records. The writing credits list Jeannie, and it was a misprint. It was actually George and his sister Jean who did the work on it. They were both from the New Kensington area of Pittsburgh, and they are both presently playing in a German-American club in New York City on weekends doing ethnic music to this very day as a hobby. In 1959, the first release of this record came out by Gene and Jeannie, and hopefully we're going to play it for you.
Is there a 45 adapter for that?
No. The first version of this record, which was cut with the Pittsburgh Symphony string section, was absolutely horrible. This has to go down in history as one of the worst records in the world. What happened was it was recorded in 59 and just disappeared immediately. A few years later, George Goodman came along and discovered the song and liked it and arranged to lease the master from Pat DeCesar, who was the original owner of the record. And he lifted the instrumental tracks from the record. And that was the version that was on Bobby, which I'm going to play for you as soon as we find a 45 RPM adapter. The first release was on Bobby. On your illustration, it's marked A. The record became an instant cutout. And if you listen to it, you'll know why. This was the historical beginning of a 10-year lifespan for Let Me Love You. By 1964, George Goodman leased the rights to Let Me Love You from Donnie Bray. Pat DeCesar was in the military at the time. The purchase price was $200. Goodman was performing with a group called the Headliners at the time and lifted the instrumental tracks from the original. And remember, once again, it's the Pittsburgh Symphony Strings and the Duquesne Horns. and he recut a new vocal track. The end result was a smooth group sound on pressing number two, which I will hopefully play for you shortly. Goodman then took his version to a local record promoter in Pittsburgh named Augie Bernardo. Augie is presently selling flowers. he owns a company in Pittsburgh called Augie's Flowers, and he has five or six flower stores. He left the business. That's part of the story. Augie, who had previously produced and released records by a handful of Pittsburgh recording artists, took the record from Goodman, and since he only had the one track with a vocal on that Goodman had provided him with, he put the instrumental version on the flip side. And this was one of the first instances in pop music, I think, of using an instrumental version on the other side. It became a very wide practice in the mid-70s and during the disco era, where they had an instrumental version and a vocal version on the other side. A lot of these are used for production today. People seek them out for commercials and things like that. Right after Augie signed Georgie Goodman, their record was issued on Val number one, and that's the picture that it's almost impossible to read. It was a very dark orange label. And by the way, I have all five copies of the records here, which I'm going to leave on the table, and you can all come up and look at it. This is the second pressing, which you cannot read. That also has the instrumental flip on it. We still don't have an adapter. That's a wait here. When Augie released the record, George Goodman's version of this record, which is the B on your list, it soared to number two in Pittsburgh on KDK Radio and KQV. It became a very large hit. And immediately, Augie turned around and sold the rights to this record to Warner Brothers Records, which is picture number three. Warner Brothers Records paid $5,000 for the rights to this record and released it. And history repeated itself. It became an instant cutout. It just died right on the spot. I mean, it never did anything. The record companies did not understand the record. The record is a very good ballad from that time period. Augie proceeded to buy back his record for $500 now. So the group was so unhappy with what had happened that they disbanded at this point. They lost faith in the record business and in Augie, and they all kind of left the business. And George Goodman went on and moved to Baltimore and went to work for Schwartz Brothers, which is a very large record distributor to this day. And in his connections working at the record distributor and working with radio stations, he made a lot of friends, and he influenced someone there to play this record in Baltimore. So he gets on the phone, and he called Augie. And he said, Augie, we have to dust off the master and bring this record back out again. So Augie represses the record on Val. That's the one with the stripes on it. And they issued it, and the record soared up the charts again in Baltimore to number two position in that market. And once again, Augie sold the record to A&M Records for $5,000. So we're doing pretty good buying and selling records here, I think. So the record died. It was an absolute flop. It didn't do a thing. Augie quits the business. He just said, I've had enough of the business. He quit. He just chucked it all. And about a year later, I discovered that he had these recordings. Now, my business was started in a little town called Etna, which is a suburban area of Pittsburgh. North suburban area, and Augie had a flower shop, which he had now went into the flower business in Sharpsburg, Pennsylvania. And he had all these records that he had stored from these groups he had managed over an 8 or 10 year period. And I decided, well, I'd make him an offer for it, because I liked the record. And the record was a Pittsburgh collectible, because you remember now, this was a number two record in my market. So it was still a saleable thing. And actually, it was number 13 on Pittsburgh's hits of all time. So it was still a saleable commodity. So I went to Augie and I bought the entire collection of all his records. And I started selling the records and trading them with other dealers around the country. And here we are. I'm coming to this ARS convention, and this story is rolling around in my head for 10 years. This was in 1976 that I bought Augie's records. And this is 1989. And I get so intrigued with this story as I'm writing it, I called the writer of the record, George Salevich. I called the producers of the records and tried to get all the facts straight on all the things in my paper. I wanted to make sure that it was all correct and that everything was chronologically in order. And I got locked into this thing. So I decided I would buy the rights to the record. So, the story's not over yet. There may be a sixth issue because, believe it or not, this record is presently breaking out as a hit record in Jamaica. On the island. It's becoming a very big hit. The record presently is worth around $20 as a collectible, and I have many, many copies of the fourth pressing that I have to sell yet. But the story, in my experience in this business, in the pop music business, I know of no other record that equals a story like this, where it was issued five separate times and never became a hit nationally, just in the two geographical areas. You find one. Very first issue of the record with Gene and Jeannie singing.
Take me in your arms and let me love you.
It's clear to me why he went to Atlantic Records as a vice president of national promotion. He sure couldn't say.
I
think that's enough torture on that one. This is a copy of the version that I have quite a few copies of that was the last final pressing of the thing before A&M got it, that Augie did when it became a hit in Baltimore. And this is with George Goodman.
Love me for the rest of my life.
final part of the story was Augie bought the record back from A&M Records for $500. And he sold it to me many years later. That was in 1976. Actually, it was about 1974 that he actually bought it back. He sold it to me this past year for $1,000. But I bought a publishing company that has 65 unreleased tunes by five or six groups that were recording in the Pittsburgh area at the time. And I'm planning on releasing George Goodwin and the Headliners' Greatest Hits. Feel free to come up and look at the records if you'd like. Pardon?